This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, I'm here and I'm alive and kicking.
Well, good. Are you for the most part staying by yourself, isolated?
Well, not exactly. You know, I still have to come to the office. I still have to see people, but you know, we just see one person at a time. So, you know, I think it's pretty safe. I really do. And I don't know if anybody out here in Midland, Odessa, it's got that disease yet.
You know, I hadn't
heard
any.
I think we're pretty safe.
Yeah, hopefully it'll stay that way.
And, you know, everything else is online. All of our customers, you know, they call in, they text us, they, you know, send us emails. So most of the time, we're not going to be around a lot of people. We're going to try not to be.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier before the show, and it hopefully that by doing all of the self quarantines and keeping people you know, separated for a couple of weeks, hopefully that'll stop the spread of it, and so things can kind of get under control again. I guess kind of stop the free fall. And then you were saying that they're working on what could be a cure, at least for some people. You said.
Well, I just heard it yesterday that this malaria drug, they've used it on some people, and it actually worked. So they don't know if it'll work on everybody or how good it's going to be. But that doctor that was talking about it said it's very cheap. So they could make up a batch of that for almost nothing if it really does work for everybody.
That would be amazing.
So it would be, and they don't know yet. They said they tried it on a few people, and it actually worked.
Wow.
But they don't know if it'll work for everybody.
Well, hopefully they can maybe whip some up or whatever they do.
Yeah, but they said the malaria drug had worked on those few people, and then the bubonic plague vaccine had worked.
Really?
So those are two that they're really trying on people, yes.
I hadn't heard
and
the second
this
one.
This sounds to me like it might be like bubonic plague, as bad as it is.
Yeah.
And fast as it is. What I don't understand, if anybody, you know, gets near these people, it spreads to 100 people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's very fast.
And they said what happened to those people up there in Seattle is that some nurse brought it into to the facility and infected those, then went back to the other nursing home and infected those.
Really?
That's what happened. I kept wondering how those old people who, you know, are absolutely isolated could have gotten it. And that's how it was. A nurse brought it in, took no precautions, and gave it to everybody there. And then she went back to the other one and gave it to those.
I had also heard that a doctor, I want to say maybe in New York City, he has tested positive as well.
Yes, and he's been around a lot of people, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So that's not good. Yeah, and he said, he apologized, said, you know, the people he might have infected.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't even know it. He was carrying it, had no idea.
Then we've got that woman running loose that went and was tested, then disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
And she tested positive, then she disappeared.
Yeah, she took off like a thief in the night.
That's right, because she knew they were going to quarantine her, and now she's probably spread it to no telling how many people.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's just irresponsible.
It's really irresponsible, but it's mostly up north, as you can see, mostly in New York, New Jersey, and Oregon, and places like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of those people, a lot of them had been out of the country,
mm-hmm.
and when they came back, they should have quarantined them and never let them off those ships and off those planes, I'm telling you.
Yeah, yeah. I know there's a couple of cruise ships that they were talking about, you know, mapping out places to kind of to quarantine them so that they didn't get out and spread it even more. And I it sounds like, from what they say, that that's really the key to really getting this under control, is to quarantine. And it sounds like people are taking it very seriously. And, yeah, people are going to the store and hoarding things, and they shouldn't be doing that. But at least a lot of people are taking it seriously, and they are staying home. A lot of workplaces are, having their people work remotely and all kinds of things. And so, or just, you know, plain old shutting down for a few weeks. But
and Macy's is shut down, which, you know, I mean, I cannot believe a store as big as Macy's. But if Macy's shuts down, which they did, no telling how many other big stores is going to close.
Yeah, yeah.
And when this is over, people are going to shop till they drop.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because they won't have it shopped for, you know, maybe a month.
Mm-hmm.
I think things will turn around.
And I think when quarantines start to get lifted and people do start to go out again, people are going to, you know what happens when these things happen is that people stay home, they get a little bit stir crazy, and then so when the bans are lifted and the quarantines are lifted and people can get out, I feel like they probably will get out, and then the economy will be, you know, get juiced again, and people will go out and spend money and do all the things that that they would normally do that they've missed for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks.
That's right, because in Dallas they closed all the restaurants. All you can do is get takeout.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big deal. They put a lot of people out of work, as you know.
Yeah.
So, and the president says he's going to help all those people, and that'll be good because they're going to need it.
Yeah. Yeah, that that stimulus package might help, keep things afloat.
Yeah, it looks like it's $1 trillion.
Yeah.
I mean, surely $1 trillion will help everybody.
You would think. What is it like? It's like $1,000 a person or something like that?
And if they've got children, it's $500 for every child you have.
Really? Neat.
That's what they said this morning, yesterday. I said this morning, I meant yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these kinds of situations, they're extreme. And so, you know, when we get into these types of things and you know, I mean, everything changes, you know, people's personal lives change, their work lives change, their, you know, everything associated and everything. It's almost like the tree branch effect. You know, one thing is affected and then, well, now if we do this, well, then that's going to cause something else to be affected as well. And so if all of this gets under control by people self-quarantining and then the stimulus package and things like that happen, it'll kind of help maybe offset itself a little bit, at least as far now with the stock market. That's something different because, well, you see what's happened over the last, what, two weeks or so.
The stock market has just flattened itself to the ground.
And next week,
I mean, there's not much left, folks.
Yeah. Next week, they're not
going.
There's
not a lot left.
Yeah, they cut the lights out.
Yeah, and I don't know. Yeah, and they said next week there would not be any personnel live at the stock market. Everything will be online.
Mm.
Everything will be electronic. There will be no people there selling stocks.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to sell stocks right now anyway. I mean, they might as well take a vacation. Who's going to buy stocks in this market?
Yeah.
And I've had people coming to me this week saying, you know, we've got enough. We can get out. We won't have any profit, but we'll get our money out, and we want to do something with it. I had a lot of people like that.
Good.
And then I had some people say, my stock's so far down, I don't know if I can get it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Don't know if I'll get all my money back.
Exactly. And that's what this is all about.
That's what it's all about. And now let's talk about my people. My people are in great shape. You know, they didn't lose anything. Their principal didn't go down. They didn't lose any interest this week. Everything they've got is solid. It's one of the best investments I ever made.
So what are you hearing from people? Are you hearing from first-time investors that are saying, hey, we've been in the stock market? What kinds of stories are you hearing from people who have been in those types of situations?
Well, I've got a lot of people who have been in the stock market a long time. They've had enough of it. They said, you know, we should have got out earlier. Mm-hmm. But, and, you know, there was people telling us, it wasn't about this, but there was people all along telling us, you know, we might have a loss in the stock market. Nobody listened. Nobody believed it.
Yeah.
And then one little thing happened and just sent it all the way down where there's no profit left.
Yeah.
I mean, the profit for the last year is gone.
Mm-hmm.
The profit they made in 19, that's all gone.
Yeah.
And thank goodness that can't happen with our investment.
It seems like this week I heard a lot of reports where they were comparing things to past, I don't want to say crashes, but past major events on Wall Street. You know, at one point they were comparing it to, you know, what happened in 1997. At another point they were comparing it to 1991. And some people are comparing it to 2008. So people are looking for other alternatives right now. And that's why investing in a life settlement, this is really a great time, if not past a great time, to start looking for other alternatives like this. So what makes investing in a life insurance policy so profitable and so much different than what everybody else is experiencing on Wall Street?
Well, first of all, you know what you're going to make going in. You know, if your contract says it's 24 months, you're going to make 24% because it's 1% a month. So you know right up front what you're going to make, how it's going to work. It's not like the stock market that you put your money in and say, well, I'd like to make this much. And they say, well, we think we can. And then something like this happens. You not only don't get your profit, you don't even get all your principal back.
Yeah.
So with a life settlement, it's a life insurance policy. You're buying a life insurance policy on someone that is critically ill. So, you know, they've got stage 4 cancer. So we think we know approximate when they're going to pass away, when this is going to mature. So every time a policy matures, you get paid. It's real simple. You have a contract. The contract says, okay, I'm going to put my money in Mr. Smith's policy. When he passes away, it's going to be 24 months. I'm going to get 24%. If it comes in early, you still get just 24. If it comes in on time, it's 24. And if it's late, it's still 24. So I love the fact that you know how much you're going to make. You know you'll get it. It's a life insurance company. It doesn't have the speculation that the stock market has.
So when people are saying, you know, hey, Faye, this is great and all, but how do we know that the money's going to be there? You know, say when the policy matures, how do we know that maybe, you know, if something even worse happens on Wall Street, how do we know that the money's going to be there to pay out these policies?
The life insurance company, this is not speculative. You know, they've set reserves aside. They've got the money. They've got billions of dollars they could pay you with. Life insurance policies are different than being in the stock market because a life insurance company, they've set aside the money to pay these, and it doesn't matter if the market goes up, down, or sideways. This is not part of the market. They are not allowed to put your money into the stock market. That's what makes it safe.
Is it too late to start? Because I'm wondering if maybe people are taking money that maybe they had floating around. Maybe they were, you know, at one point going to, you know, look for alternative investments. Maybe they were going to do, you know, this and that. The other thing, I'm wondering if people are reallocating that cash and saying now, oops, you know, we may need this for something else, or we may need this now to pay bills, or we may need, you know, whatever. Is it too late to start?
I don't think so. If they're thinking they're going to need it for bills, they don't have enough money to do this.
Right.
We're talking about people that have got $100 to $500,000 cash on hand. We're not talking about somebody that says, well, I don't know if I can do this. I may need this to live on. If they need it to live on, they don't have enough money to do this. You know, this is money beyond what you use to live on. This is not your living expenses. This is not your emergency money. If this is your emergency money, you better keep it.
Okay.
If that's all you've got, you know, is $100,000 emergency fund, don't even think about it.
Yeah, it's probably, I guess, important to kind of, you know, set the expectation right up front is that this, if this is one of these things that people are looking at and saying, hey, I've got $50 left, I've lost everything else, let me go do this. No, this is not the thing. This is not like playing the lottery.
No, it's not. So this is money that people have. I had a lot of people come this week, and we did some great things for them. We put them in some policies. And it's like this. It's this is money they have set aside. These are big enough people that they have, you know, maybe half a million, a million sitting there in cash. And so they can certainly afford to invest because this is other monies they've got. They've got plenty of money, and those are the people right now that are going to be investing. The people that can take it out of a 401 right now, especially if they're 60 years old, they may not want to ride this horse again. They may want to get their money out and get it to stabilization and get it where it's a lot safer. And those are the people right now that are going to be doing this. People that have got cash on hand and people that say, you know, I've got a 401k, I've got enough, I can take half of it out or a third of it out. I want it to safety. I want it where it's secure. That's the ones that are coming to us.
Okay. Because it's a totally different approach now, you know, say even than it was, you know, maybe a month ago or 6 months ago or a year ago when we were talking, you know, now it's a completely different dynamic. The whole approach to investing has really taken a major shift in a very, very short amount of time. And so if people are saying, geez, you know, I've lost, you know, $200,000 to $300,000 in the stock market, and I need to, you know, stop the free flow or the free fall, this might be the time to go ahead and start looking at a life insurance policy type of investment. So the investment itself, this is the kind of thing, and it's very, very different than what people are experiencing on Wall Street. It has nothing to do with stocks. It's not affected by anything. So how is a life insurance policy, how does that become an investment for people to actually make money in a time when other people are investing in other things and not making money?
Well, when you buy a life insurance policy, you don't pay, you know, what the face amount is. If you did, you wouldn't have any profit. But when we buy a life insurance policy and someone that's critically ill, you know, we're paying 60-70% on the dollar. So it's built-in profit. When it matures, you're going to get the difference between what we paid for it and what the face amount is. So the profit is built-in. Nobody can take that away.
And so when people are looking at this and they're saying, okay, this has got my interest. Now, how do we know that these policies aren't going to last, you know, another 20 years before it pays off? It's because you are buying. It starts with bidding. And then once you awarded the bid, you buy policies of people only with stage 4 cancer, right?
That's right. That's why we don't have just a million policies every day. If we were like some of these people on the air, you know, they're saying, we'll just buy your policy. You can go to Hawaii. You can go to Europe. You can do all this. But they're not paying them hardly anything for them, which is fine. But they're not sick. And we're not going to buy a policy of somebody that's not sick. You know, if they're not critically ill, we're going to try to miss that policy. Let somebody else buy it. But, you know, if it's a $1 million policy or bigger, we get two opinions from two separate doctors or clinics. Telling us what they think about that person, how ill they are, how much treatment they've had, if they're doing alternate medicine. I bid on a breast cancer case this week. She's doing alternate medicine, and we've never had one that did alternate medicine that didn't come in early. If they're going to do all that orange juice and the oil and all this other, it's going to come in early.
And the reason is
because... So anyway, I bid on one this week.
But you don't know if you've got it yet, though, right?
We don't know. I think we're close on it because we bid it Thursday, and it's looking really good. They said they wanted to work with us on it. So that tells me that we're probably the high bidder. That's how you can tell if you're a high bidder. They said, we'd like to work for you on this. So, you know, that's what we're doing. But every time we bid on a policy, we look to see how many treatments they've had, if they're on morphine. By the way, this lady was on morphine. So you know how bad the pain is. You know that she's in her last days on this. She's had every kind of treatment in the world, but she won't come back and do regular treatment. You know, she's doing all that alternate stuff. So you can just bet this will be an early one, and I'd stake some money on that, you know, that it will be early.
And so when people do alternate treatments, it just lets the cancer progress even more untreated.
It progresses faster, let's put it that way.
All right.
When you do alternate medicine, it will progress a lot faster, and you're going to be dead a lot sooner. So people that do that, I don't know why they do, when they know our doctors in the United States are saying you either need chemo or you need radiation to try to save your life. And they go over here to Mexico or go to Europe and do strange things. And when they come back and they're really feeling bad and they've lost 25 pounds while they were gone, they suddenly go back to the doctor and say, okay, I want to try that. It's too late.
Yeah, yeah. At that point, it's gone, I guess, past the point of no return. And at that point, the doctors can't do anything. And it's kind of fascinating when you look at these reports, you look at these policies, there's not like a if it's a good policy, there's a green check mark. If it's not good, there's a red check mark. You're analyzing this data. And this is really it's what makes the cornerstone of this type of investment so important. It's because these policies aren't chosen just willy-nilly. You're looking at, yes, the types of cancer. Yes, what kinds of pain medicine are they on? But you're also looking at these things like you were talking about, what's their life like? What haven't they done? What, not only with the treatments they've done, but what haven't they done? And so you're putting all this together and you're really analyzing these policies, and that makes each policy so profitable. And that's why, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that's really the cornerstone of the whole investment. That's why people are consistently making money in relatively short amounts of time. Am I looking at this the right way?
That's the way I look at it, because it is consistent. People who invest with us consistently make money. I go back, we do studies all the time on the different people who invest, what they're investing in, how often they're investing, and the people, the group that invest all the time, their name comes up on policies. I've got one person right now that this last month had a maturity. I've got two policies that have not gotten to the bank yet, and this person is in both of those.
Mm.
So that's three. They're going to be three in 2 months that have matured that she's got. So, this happens all the time, that people who invest consistently, they're the ones that make money more often than people who say, I'll just set this one out.
Yeah.
And so, it works, but it works because they're consistent with their investing.
And so I guess we're kind of relating the whole investment to, things that people are typically used to, like the stock market and the strange times that we're in. So as we look at, how people are paid, yes, it's a life insurance policy. And so when it matures, the money is there. People are going to, they're not going to have to worry about it, even if the stock market completely crashes. But as far as policy availability goes, I would assume that that's not affected by really anything, stock market or worldly events or tornadoes or hurricanes. It just, they're always coming available, right?
That's right. And right now, we're working on several million dollars in policies. I've just filled a $2 million policy, and now I'm working on a million and a 4 million.
Wow.
Yes, and the 4 million is not definite yet, but the million is ready to go, and we're putting people in. Again, it's pancreatic cancer. That's everybody's favorite thing. It's pancreatic cancer, because, as we all know, it's about a 12-month deal when you get pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm. It's a fast maturer.
It is. It matures pretty fast, a lot faster than other kinds. And this person is ill, has been in the hospital. I'm hoping that they don't mature before we get this done, because that would be bad. We'd have to give all the money back, and we haven't talked about that lately. But remember this: after we close, most states have got a 15-day period. If they die in that 15-day period, we have to give the heirs the money instead of our clients getting the money, and so then the money goes back in their accounts and we have to start over.
All right.
And about a month ago, we had a small policy that rescinded, and we had to put everybody's money into another policy. But thank goodness we had one ready, and we just switched it over.
And so when that happens, if the first thing people think is, "Oh man, I'm gonna lose my whole investment if they rescind in 15 days," it's not actually like that. What happens is, and please correct me if I'm summarizing this wrong, but if people are into a policy and all of a sudden, you know, on day 10, something happens, they rescind, and so it's not there, all you're going to do is take that investment and put it in another policy. People aren't actually out anything, right?
No, they're not out a dime. The people give the money back, and they simply go to the insurance company, and they get the whole thing. So they give us our money back. We put it back in everybody's account. Then we put them in a different policy. It's just that simple. That's the way it works.
And so for just a little bit of background information for people, the way you get these policies is that when somebody is diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, it's very, very expensive. What did you say? It's like $100,000 a month or something like that, right?
It's about $100,000 a month to get you through the cancer.
That's expensive.
And then if it's stage 4, you know, you're probably not going to make it, but they're going to try to keep you alive, you know, maybe a year or 2 years or even three, mm-hmm. you know. So it depends what your life expectancy is after they diagnose and start treatment. And a lot of people, you know, will go to a big, big hospital that's really well-equipped, and some of them do it in a small town. And the small town usually does not have, you know, all the things that a big hospital has. And now with this virus deal, I don't know how it's going to work, because only the critically ill will probably be treated in a hospital.
Mm, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. So a lot of it, they're going to, you know, give you in pill form. They're going to do all kinds of things that they were not doing before.
So when you're looking
it's
at these policies,
it's not going to be the same kind of medicine. No.
No, it'll be. I don't. It might be horrible to say it's. I guess they get the best in the big cities, right? That'd be a good way to put it.
Yes. In the big cities, they have more of everything for you. And right now, they're saying anybody that needs elective surgery, don't even do it. Don't even think about it. They need the hospital beds.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess we never really talk about it very much, but as you're looking at these policies and all the factors that we were talking about earlier, you're also looking at where the person is and see if they have access to some of those, you know, well-equipped hospitals in big cities, or if they're, you know, in a small town someplace and they can't drive to better treatments and things like that. You're also looking at where they are. I guess we haven't really spent a whole lot of time talking about that.
And our people come from everywhere on the globe. You know, we've done several Texas policies. They lived in Laredo. They lived in El Paso. You know, way out, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Very edge of Texas. And we've done several of those. We've done some from Corpus Christi. So most of these people, you know, they don't have the opportunity of a huge hospital.
Yeah.
And but they, you know, whatever treatment they got, it didn't make any difference. You know, they passed away. And then we've done a lot. We've had people from California, just all different states. And of course, it tells us what treatment they had, how often, you know, which hospitals usually that they went to. Mm-hmm. And we know that, you know, whatever they did, it wasn't enough. And they may have fought it for several years. Some cancers, you know, you can fight it for several years, and then it's just over. And then some, you know, they say, oh, well, it went into remission, and 2 years later it's back, and that second time it will kill you.
Yeah, yeah. The numbers are there. They show that, and you keep analyzing these numbers. You're even analyzing the analytics on the numbers just to make sure that everything is still accurate and everything is still, you know, current, you know, all the formulas that you use and things you're always going back to making sure that that those are still accurate data analysis. And so when you're looking at these policies and you're saying, hey, I want to buy this one, it's important to know where they come from. It's important to know that, you know, people, they need that money. They need to, you know, because you, like we were just talking about, fighting stage 4 cancer is very, very expensive. And so people want to sell their policy so that they can go ahead and fight it. And so that's how you get these policies. Nobody's going out and taking anybody's policy. The insurance company didn't cancel it or anything like that. They need the money. And so they need for people like you and then ultimately investors to be on the other side to go ahead and buy it. So what happens after they sell their policy? How much are they involved with what happens, or how does that work?
Well, and another thing, before I answer that question, something I just thought about. All these people that are being laid off all over the United States right now temporarily, if let's say their wife has cancer, if they haven't sold their policy now, they may have to quickly because they don't have the income coming in to support them while they're doing cancer treatment.
Mm.
And if you don't have the income coming in while you're doing this, it's a double-edged deal. I mean, it's going to hit you on both sides. So this is another reason now we will probably have a lot more people selling their policies because they don't have any income. Yesterday, they laid off 87 people in one company out here.
Wow, that's a lot.
87 people. It's a lot. And they probably won't go back to work, they're saying, now, May and June. Well, if you have a loved one that happened to have cancer, you're not going to have any income. So you're thinking about, we've got to get something done. Well, we've got a life insurance policy. Let's get that sold. That person has a life insurance policy, $250,000. That would make a big difference right now.
Mm-hmm.
It would get them, some cash for treatment and maybe even to live on. I hate to say that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, like individual people, as well as, companies that are, they're coming up with plans to make it through, just the next, 6 or 8 weeks or so. Hopefully, if some of the things that we hear are true, there is a rebound coming. It's just a slight bump in the road. But in the meantime, people are saying, like you said, hey, with those 87 people that got laid off, they may have to be selling their policies. And so it's really an interesting time, and it's interesting that there are other options for people for investing. And this is one of these things that I think that people are probably going to start looking at seriously, even if they've heard about it before. They've heard you talking for years and years. This might be the time where they actually say to themselves, hey, let's stop, let's reassess, and let's go ahead and move forward with something that's a little bit more conservative and quote-unquote safe. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
We should also mention that your website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com, where people can go and find information. They can see actual dollars that people have been making with this type of investment. They can see testimonials, get a little bit of information about how the investment works before they come see you. So every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. What is our topic this morning?
Well, I decided we need to talk about food at a time like this.
That's a good topic.
I mean, it is a good topic. What do you think the top 15 foods in Texas are?
I'm going to say meat and steak.
Barbecue is number one in Texas.
There you go.
Of all things, number one. What do you think number two is?
Steak? Hamburgers? Steak.
Chili. Chili is number two.
Really? I would have never guessed that.
And number three?
Could I go with steak again?
Yes, chicken fried steak above all things. Chicken fried steak is Texas all the way. Almost every restaurant sells chicken fried steak. They don't do it the same way, but they all sell chicken fried steak.
Well, I knew steak had to be in the top three somewhere.
It is. It's way on up there. And then queso. Everybody loves queso in the state of Texas.
That is true. That is true.
And then for a drink, what do you think the favorite is?
I'm going to say beer.
Dr. Pepper.
That's what I meant, Dr. Pepper.
Yes, that's right. Dr. Pepper is the drink of Texas.
Really? I had no idea. Isn't it made in Texas?
It is made in Texas.
Ah-ha.
Yeah, it started down there in Texas. I've got some of the old bottles. Yes. And what dessert do you think is big? And I would not have thought this.
I'm going to go crazy and say Boston cream pie.
Oh, no, that would never be a Texas deal. Kolaches. Kolaches. because, you know, all the Germans brought the kolaches over here. And in West WST, Texas, they have a wonderful place for all their kolaches. Then down here in South Texas, we have all these Germans, and they make kolaches by the hundreds. Every kind they make. Fruit kolaches, they make cream cheese kolaches. Every kind in the world.
See, I didn't know that. I thought they all had like some kind of meat, like sausage or something in the middle, and I thought they were like only for breakfast. I had no idea. I didn't know they were considered dessert.
Well, they are. A lot of people have them for breakfast, but they are considered a dessert. Everybody just loves them. Let's figure that. Like you say, you can make a kolache with jelly. You can make it with cream cheese. You can make it with sausage, ham. You can make it a million different ways. And in Texas, it's served every way in the world.
Mm.
And then the other thing that's Texas all the way is sweet tea.
Oh, yes.
I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet tea is so big in Texas.
Hmm.
And, of course, we don't even talk about Tex-Mex, but Tex-Mex is not as popular as barbecue is in Texas. There's so many barbecue places. You know, we've done a study on them, if you remember. And some of these little bitty places, hole-in-the-walls, are famous in Texas. And that one place we talked about last year that won Best in Show in Texas, they're only open on weekends.
Really?
And when they sell, they sell, and they go home.
And that's it? They close the doors?
And the pit master is that little lady. She's about 78 years old, been doing it 23 years.
Wow.
And she gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning, goes down and starts her fires, gets that barbecue going early morning. And they only do it 2 days a week. When they're gone, they're gone. It's just an amazing deal in Texas.
I'd imagine there's a big crowd outside their door to make sure they get some of that.
Oh, absolutely. I've heard stories of people driving 200 miles to get some and to be sure it's not sold out when they do get there.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
And, of course, now, I'm not big on chili. Everybody in South Texas is really big on chili because, you know, they go deer hunting. They make deer chili. They make all these exotic chilies and, you know, and tamales. They do all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But chicken fried steak, I'm with them all the way.
Oh, yeah, it's delicious. I would imagine there's got to be burritos have to be somewhere in the top 20 someplace, I would think.
I would think so, but they're not in the top 15. I said, let's do the top 15 things in Texas that are Texas all the way.
Hmm.
And so they're probably number 20 or 25, you know, like all your Mexican food, you know. But queso, now queso is big.
Yeah.
I mean, queso is so big, it's ridiculous. And, you know, people make queso so many different ways.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people put meat in. I don't want meat in my queso.
Mm-hmm.
I just want plain old queso.
Yeah. You got like peppers and onions and all kinds of things in there.
Yeah, people do all kinds of stuff. And I just want, you know, tomatoes and cheese in mine.
Mm,
keep it simple and yeah. I'll eat it.
Yeah. Simple is always best.
And, of course, every time anybody in Texas has a football game, there's always queso. Doesn't matter what they're serving, they'll have queso there.
Yeah, there should
you know?
Be.
And almost any gathering will have barbecue. I know people that on Easter, they eat barbecue.
Really?
Which I have never done. No, I would not eat barbecue on Easter, but they do. Order them up a bunch of barbecue for Easter Sunday.
What do you have for Easter Sunday? Ham?
Ham, always ham,
hmm.
And turkey. I'll have some turkey and some ham.
Delicious.
But oh yeah, I mean, but I can't imagine having barbecue, on that day. It's just not dressy enough for me.
Do you have queso with your turkey and ham?
No, I don't. I could, but I never have done that.
You're breaking the law, I think.
That's right. I mean, you know, we have a place called Gloria's. And it's from like South America, and they serve so much queso. I don't even know how much it is,
yeah.
But they serve queso by the gallons there.
No,
and they'll have shrimp. They'll have Spanish food, but they always have the queso.
Mm, it's delicious. When we talk about barbecue, are we talking about like pulled pork or something more like brisket? Because I would think it would lean more toward brisket.
Brisket. Now, and I've talked to a lot of people. They love pulled pork, but it's always your brisket that everybody cooks.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll get a great big brisket and put it on for hours. And in Texas, men love to experiment. You know, they've all got a cooker in the backyard. They've got a big grill. And they'll spend hours perfecting their barbecue,
mm-hmm.
just like the restaurants do. So I don't know how much barbecue is sold. I think I did a study on it once, but I forgot how much thousands and thousands of pounds of barbecue that are sold.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's a science to cook barbecue, and they always say that the wood that you smoke with makes all the difference in the world.
Every time I've talked to a pit master, that's what they tell me.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the type of wood you use. And then the rubs. A lot of people do all these exotic rubs on theirs, and then some to keep it pretty simple. But they always have paprika, I've noticed, in the rubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
always.
And it's an art form to get the rub to match the flavor of the wood, because they have to complement each other in the end, or else you got some weird flavors that don't quite mix.
That's right, and I've seen some expensive new smokers, and they let them down in the end. It's just hilarious. I saw this smoker. I mean, it was probably $25,000.
Wow.
Really hip, really great. And this guy took it to a contest and was going to beat everybody because he had this new expensive deal. He gets his meat in there, turns it on, and nothing happened. Nothing happened. Something was wrong. He had a short. And you know what he did? He had brought with him his old smoker from the house. It looked like it had seen better days. It looked like it was from the 50s. It wasn't even good looking. He put that meat on there, left it 12 hours, and he won the contest.
Really?
Yes, using a cheap little old backyard smoker.
That just goes to show you, fancy is not always best.
Fancy has nothing to do with good barbecue and a good smoke on it. I mean, I was laughing. I said, can you imagine? That would be something I'd do.
Yeah.
Go out and buy something expensive, and it didn't even work. You know? But every man in Texas loves to think that he's a pit master and that he makes the best barbecue in town.
Yeah.
And a lot of them work years on this,
on
their recipes and their techniques for getting it done.
Absolutely.
But a good barbecue, you know, you're talking 12 hours.
Oh, yeah. Low and slow all the way.
Oh, yeah, 225, and it takes a long time to get it just right.
Mm-hmm. And no sauce.
And no. You don't want to put any sauce on it until you get it cooked.
Yeah.
But you've got your rub on it. If you've got the right rub, that thing is going to come out and taste heavenly.
Mm-hmm. Have that nice little crust on it.
Yes, you got to have a little crust on it. But when they start slicing that thing up, it should be perfection.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you put just a little bit of sauce on it, and it's good to go.
I'm starting to think maybe you should be a barbecue judge.
I know barbecue, let me tell you. I've tried some of the best in the world and some of the ones that wasn't so best. Some that was just a little bit out of kilter.
Mm.
But I've been to some of the most wonderful barbecue places in the world. And they weren't big, they weren't expensive, they weren't elaborate.
Yeah.
You know, they just had little benches to sit on, and they gave you a piece of paper to eat it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're going into
a
barbecue place and they have, like, fancy dishes and they have fancy cups and fancy decor, you're probably in the wrong place.
That's right, because they don't know anything about barbecue.
Yeah.
They just know how to serve it real pretty, but they don't know how to cook it.
Exactly.
So you need to stay away from those places. Go to the places where you see all the truckers and all these people, hometown people, in other words.
Yeah.
If you see all your hometown people there, you know it's good.
Yeah. That's a good indicator.
If the hometown people don't want it, you don't want it either.
You ever try to make barbecue yourself, or you just go eat other people's?
No, I make barbecue.
Do you really?
Well, of course I do.
You smoke it for 12 hours? What's your secret ingredient? What's your secret?
I think the secret is having it at 225, having a good rub on it, and staying with it.
Yeah.
And not be opening that smoker a lot.
Yeah. No. You can't do that. It changes the whole balance of the temperature, and, it just messes everything up. Let it do its thing.
It will mess everything up.
Yeah.
And try to, when you get this done, let it set out, let it breathe, and then you slice it. And then you've got that barbecue sauce ready, and put a little bit on it. And that's all you have to do.
Yeah, the juices have to redistribute before you slice it, and then everything is good to go.
That's right. Yeah, you've got to put it in some foil, let it set, let it breathe before you do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you get good barbecue,
you've done everything right.
It's great. When you have bad barbecue, man, there's nothing worse.
That's right. And if you get some that's hard around the edges, just put it back. You know? If that dadgum thing's hard around the edges, that's not what you want to eat, let me tell you. I want that thing to fall apart in my hand.
Yeah, yeah. That's how you know you got it.
If it's not falling apart in my hand, it's not ready. You know? That stuff is not ready for prime time, let me tell you.
There you go. See, you should come up with a recipe book for how to barbecue the right way with Faye Bagby.
I'd have to include some other recipes, though, wouldn't I?
Yeah, that's
some
all right.
Of my other famous recipes.
or just sell one for a fortune, and it's all about supply and demand. You know, you jack the price up, and people know they've got something special.
I see. Now I know how you figure you should sell stuff. If you jack it up high enough, they will come, and they will buy it, right?
Yeah. Well, it's expensive. Oh, it must be good.
Yeah, a lot of people feel like that. You know, if it costs enough, it's got to be good.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring. Right next to that big store, Ivy Cottage.
Your favorite store.
My favorite store.
And your website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can find all kinds of information there. So we're talking about a life settlement. We're talking about investing in a life insurance policy as opposed to a lot of the options that people have been investing in for years and years. And we know over the last several weeks that the market is very volatile. We've seen a record number of downs lately. And so people are looking for other alternatives. However, as wonderful as a life insurance policy is to invest in, there are three risks, and we always have to talk about these. However, when we talk about the risks, we've always said, well, they're kind of relatively low. But when we compare them to the risks that we see right in front of our faces right now, they seem even lower. So what's the biggest risk of a life insurance policy investment?
The biggest risk is it could go over. The doctors could be wrong. It could go 2 years over. It could go 3 years over. Or it could go 6 months over. So you have to be prepared. If you're in an IRA, it won't make any difference. You can't cash that thing out anyway. So if it goes a little bit longer, your money is still safe. But it could go longer. It could take you longer to get your money. So that's your biggest risk. The second risk is it's not in cash during that time, and everybody knows that. I had people in this week, and they said, well, we know that there's not any cash there while it's invested. I said, that's exactly right. When you invest in a life policy, your money is in that policy. You own that life insurance policy. So when it comes due, then you get your money and you invest again. The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. We've never had one go under in Texas. There hadn't been one nationally go under for years because of their premium income. Their premium income is so great. It's so many millions and millions of dollars. Somebody would buy them, and they always have. So that's really your three risks right there.
So going with the biggest risk, number one, that the policy could go over, I want to get into two things here. One, what happens if it goes over? And two, how does that affect anybody's profit margin, if at all?
Well, think about it this way. If it goes over, we usually have an extra 12 months of premium there, okay? So then it's not going to happen, hit you right away. And then, hopefully, it's a low premium and it won't hurt you, bottom line. It's usually not so much that you can cover it. You know, usually it's $1,000 or less. We've got some old policies that might be more. But the ones we've been doing in the last few years, we've tried to keep that premium low.
Okay. Let's run through a hypothetical scenario real quick, just to kind of give people a general idea, because we're talking about, you know, big numbers here. We're talking about big profits. We're talking about, you know, risks. We're talking about things like that. Let's just run a hypothetical scenario so people can put it in real dollar bills and see the actual potential in real figures. So say somebody has an investment of $100,000 and it's a 24-month policy, which means that the doctors think that the policy will mature in 24 months. That's how that is come up with, right? Am I at least getting that far right?
That's right. That's exactly right. They think it'll be 24 months.
Okay. And so the goal is to get profits at 1% a month, which would be 24% of, on this hypothetical case, $100,000 equals $24,000 profit, right?
Right.
So now we take, and this is what's really going to put it in perspective. Say, let's just run a hypothetical thing. You threw out, you know, one of the premiums could be $1,000. Let's throw $1,000. Somebody's got to pay $1,000 for a premium for a policy that might go over. We won't get into like specific terms if it's quarterly or yearly or how long it goes over. But let's just say it goes over. They have to pay $1,000 in premiums. $1,000 out of 24 grand. Is still a $23,000 profit. Is that right?
That's right. But let's say it goes over 2 years. It's still $23,000 rather than, $22,000, rather than $24,000. Oh, my gosh. So anyway, you take $2,000 off, $1,000 per each year. So it's still a good profit. You're still going to make money. It's not going to ruin your life. You're not going to lose any of your principal. Remember that on all of our investments, your principal is safe. It's in a life insurance policy. It's not going down. I just can't say that enough. Your principal is always right there because it's in a life insurance policy. And that life insurance policy has got your profit in it also. Your profit and your principal is in a life insurance policy. So I don't know how much safer you could have it.
So say for a second,
it's just not going down.
Somebody who's never done this before and they're hearing this for the first time, they're taking it seriously. They're really running through some numbers, looking for other alternatives. And they say, Faye, this is great. But the example that that you just gave, let's say my profit was $22,000. I can't retire on that. How does this work for retirement?
Okay, it's not the only policy you've got. If it is, we did a bad job. You should have six policies to 30 policies, where you've got something coming due all the time. No, the interest, if you got 22,000 interest, that's on one policy. You should have several, where you've got interest coming in from several different policies. And you may not have but one every 2 years. So it's going to take 7 or 8 years, you know, to build up a lot of money. And as I've told it several times, we have people that are getting from 57,000 to 94,000 in interest every year.
So it adds up quickly. This is not the type of investment where people should say, hey, I'm going to come in, I'm going to invest in a policy or maybe two, and I'm going to be ready for retirement. This is part of a long-term strategy. I know we've really gotten, you know, hyper-zoomed in on the policies themselves, but taking a step back a little bit, looking at the big picture, you say, what, seven, 8 years or so, and how many policies should somebody be in, generally speaking? I know every situation is different, but generally speaking, how many policies should somebody expect to be in over that time period?
Well, a lot. If you start out with six, you know, that's going to double. You may have 12 before it's over, but you should have quite a few policies in order to retire happy and wealthy. And you have to keep investing and turning it over in order to do that. If you only have one policy, you're not going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're not going to have enough to retire, I can tell you, even close. But if you've got like six or eight, you know, it's going to do a lot of good.
So say I have somebody maybe 45 or 50 that, you know, all of a sudden is looking for or they're looking at a different situation at work. Maybe their company is starting to downsize and they're saying, Faye, I didn't expect this. I'm not ready for retirement. I haven't started investing. I should have done this years ago. Is it too late at 40 or 45 to start?
No, heck no. 45, 50 years old is just right. Because you've got 16, 17, 18 years to go, you know.
So
if you've got that long to go, if you start investing now, you'll have a very good retirement 16 years. There's not any doubt about it.
So people don't have to panic. They don't have to worry. They can come in no matter where they are in the spectrum of, you know, their retirement plans. They can still come in. You can still put together a plan for them and get them going and really start growing their wealth when a lot of other people are consistently losing wealth. So what does it look like as far as appointments for the next couple of weeks? Are you available? Are you swamped? What's it look like?
Well, we are taking appointments. We will take appointments. And I don't know yet. I would say Wednesday through Friday.
Okay. All right.
That we'll have enough appointments for those days. And as I said, a lot of people have been calling. We've had a lot of appointments this week. We did a lot of business this week. We moved a lot of money for people this week. And I think that from the next 30 days, that's the way it'll be. We'll be busy.
Perfect. All right. So for people to call and get started with the whole process, ask questions, whatever they want to do, they do need to make an appointment. So what is your phone number for people to call?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold. This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.